Welcome to Shaping Sustainable Places. I'm John Ambrose, and this week we've got a special episode reporting from New York Climate Week. We've got people on the ground bringing you the lowdown on the trends and discussions as leaders from government, business, research and beyond join forces to take on the climate challenge and shape a more resilient and sustainable future for us all. We're excited to welcome Dr. Stephen Hammer, CEO of the New York Climate Exchange. In just a short time, the Climate Exchange has already built up a reputation for developing solutions that are helping communities become stronger, safer, and more prepared for the effects of climate change. Dr. Hammer, welcome to Shaping Sustainable Places.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
As well as being a global center for developing urban solutions to the climate crisis, the Climate Exchange is also a valuable resource for New Yorkers. But you're a fairly new organization. Can you tell us about your work and your priorities?
So the Exchange was created at the behest of the city of New York. If you think about what New York does well, you know, whether it's on finance, we're the heart of the global diplomatic community, we are an arts and culture capital. And I think that part of the strategy in developing something like the Exchange was to elevate what the city already does extraordinarily well and put that in service to increasingly pressing challenges, but also capitalizing on opportunities. And so use the collective brain power of what we have in New York, but then bring together new expertise and, again, try and tackle the world's hardest problems.
You have a very large network of partners in higher education, corporate sector, philanthropic and community partners. How do you work with these partners on solutions for addressing climate change?
Well, that's one of the things that's really unique about the Exchange is this consortium that we've pulled together, that from day one, the idea was that we need a place that we can actively collaborate. But secondly, we need a different way of collaborating. And that means that you do want to bring the experts who have very different perspectives. And when I say that, I mean not just, you know, what would the engineers say or what would the business school folks say, but really draw on the entirety of what our academic partners bring to the table in terms of law, in terms of public health, in terms of communications, in terms of the science, and put that together in a more interdisciplinary way to help bring out those facts to this conversation in a compelling way. But then you also want to be bringing in business perspectives. You want to be bringing in community perspectives. When you put all of those folks together, one room, one conversation, one problem that we're trying to work on together, you end up framing solutions and opportunities differently because people have very different perspectives. If you can imagine, corporates are thinking in terms of, you know, what they can do to transform markets globally. When I bring in some of my community partners, they're translating that into jobs for people in the neighborhood. They're translating the challenges into the flooding issues that happen after every heavy rainstorm. And so the macro issues need to be married in a compelling way to the ground level perspective, because if we can't get the buy-in, we can't understand what the reality is on that ground, a lot of the big ideas are never going to move.
One thing that we've been hearing more and more about is your new climate campus at Governors Island. SCAS is also involved at an early stage. But can you tell us more about what's the whole idea behind Governors Island? What's it going to be?
So this is an island in the middle of New York Harbor. Depending on which direction you're looking at, the Statue of Liberty is right over there. Wall Street is right across the way. And you see how we are at the center of a vibrant economy. You're sitting on an island that has firsthand experience with the vulnerability of a storm surge in the case of Hurricane Sandy 15 years ago. All of those things together can really change the dynamic of a conversation when you host a discussion or research on Governor's Island. And so our intent is to build a space that, again, capitalizes on the realities that are inherent to that space, but invite in researchers, innovators, students, and academic experts, and give them a home on the island. And when you put that together and you have adjacent to that conversations about how do we move money to pay for different types of interventions at scale, or how do we expand interest and engagement on new resilience initiatives, when people might see it as an inconvenience for a period of time, even though there will be a long-term value. We bring those folks together in a space, and it's going to be this incredible cross-fertilization of access to experts, access to ideas, and doing it in a space that, again, takes you out of the day-to-day. It takes a lot of the stresses of the city away because you can begin to imagine a different type of reality when you're on Governor's Island. And we're going to capitalize on all of that, bring folks together, utilize the space very productively to have really deep conversations.
It is an amazing spot, and it's going to be very exciting to see what the campus becomes. I'd like to pick up on something that you mentioned there about resilience. This is obviously one of the big themes for everyone at the moment. When we're talking about resilience, what are some of the biggest challenges that you're seeing that communities are facing? And what sort of solutions are you and the team at the Climate Exchange being able to help them identify?
Go back to what I said about how we need to be bringing different perspectives together, because if I'm a homeowner and I'm living in a low-lying area of Brooklyn near Jamaica Bay and there is regular flooding, even on days when it's not raining, I'm going to be thinking very differently about what appropriate solution is to have a conversation about than if I'm a corporation that's thinking about global supply chains and the impacts of climate impacts internationally and how I need to diversify the sources or customer base for my business. Again, all of those things together is why we think it's so important to bring these different perspectives together, because it's too easy to get locked into what is only unique to you or only of importance to you. We're trying to get people to open their minds to say that we need solutions that are actually going to suit multiple audiences if we're actually going to make the progress we need at the speed and scale required.
And as we mentioned before, it's all local and it's all very contextual. I'd like us to turn to New York Climate Week, which is why we got to get you onto the podcast. Are you seeing the role of New York Climate Week evolving?
I've been coming here for about 15 years. You know, Climate Week has evolved over time. It started because it was adjacent to the UN General Assembly, and you can capitalize on proximity to global policymakers or influencers and try and begin to encourage them to get involved in climate-related discussions. Now it's taken on a life unto itself, and it's really fascinating to see climate weeks emerge in other parts of the world. Again, some of them have a very global tint. Some of them are very local in terms of how they're approaching issues. New York continues to run the gamut in terms of, are we talking about local issues or are we talking about global issues? And being able to bring in heads of state, being able to bring in ministers, being able to bring in the policymakers who are trying to grapple with how do we move solutions faster and further into a conversation and put those ideas in front of a Wall Street crowd? How do you capitalize on those opportunities? Climate Week does that in hundreds of spaces, in hundreds of ways. And I think it's so unique because it really speaks to what New York does well, which is A, doing a lot of things, but doing it differently. You know, so the arts and culture conversations that you probably won't see at a lot of other climate weeks are really prominent if you look at the calendar. The focus on community level perspectives is really prominent, particularly this year. I think it's really grown over the last 2-3 years and put that perspective on par with what the global policymakers are saying. So it's an extraordinary week, gets crowded, but you know, for us, as we're thinking about the long-term vision of where the exchange fits in Climate Week, we're going to be doing things traditionally in Midtown and the other boroughs as well. But we also want to begin to get people to move to Governor's Island, have, you know, hosting more and more events on Governor's Island, again, because we think it creates a different dynamic. You can walk around, go see the seawall that's being designed to navigate increasing sea level. Go look at the architectural strategies that we're going to be baking into the building, the largest solar canopy in New York City. Those are features that are intended to inspire, to inform, and to help drive a conversation that may be a little bit more different, but it speaks to what we can do today and what you can do tomorrow as you're thinking about building your business, transforming your home, what have you, bringing those ideas directly to the public.
Mm. What are you picking up as the hottest topics this year?
I think there are a few things. One is obviously it's hard to escape kind of the changing politics globally. That's having an effect on financial markets. Secondly, the issue of how to pay for things. Aside from big money on Wall Street, how do you pay for things in cities and countries where it's harder to continue to layer on, you know, new debt after new debt to pay for the changes in infrastructure that we need to address climate change going forward? There are some unique ideas in terms of new types of fees or tariffs targeting particular sources or audiences. How can you translate that into new money that's available systematically for climate? The resilience strategies, again, will be more varied because, as you noted, it's location specific. Are we talking about extreme heat? Are we talking about more extreme weather events, more rainfall, faster? Are we talking about sea level rise? Are we talking about drought and the impacts that's going to have on food chain? I see homes for all of those conversations this year, and you know they all need to be talked about. I think for me, having been, you know, working for an international financial institution before I joined the exchange, the idea of how do you pay for things, it's top of mind for me. It's something that the exchange is going to be focusing on quite a bit going forward. How do we rally the resources we need, you know, locally and globally? And so waiting to hear about any new ideas, any innovations that really might unlock capital, that's what I'm hopeful for. Unfortunately, I think we just hear a lot of the same type of conversations about we need more money. Here's an example. There's two examples, but we're not seeing the ideas that are replicable at scale. And that's where we need the real innovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finally, I'd like to ask you a slightly curly question, if I may. As CEO of the New York Climate Exchange, we've covered a lot of ground in our talk today, but what keeps you up at night and what gets you up in the morning?
Well, it's easy, you know, getting up in the morning when you have the opportunity to build out an institution like the exchange. That's an extraordinary opportunity. I like to think about the exchange as something that has been missing in the institutional landscape in New York City, something that, again, learns from the universities that we already have in abundance in this area, but then turns the attention to more applied challenges, partnerships with business community, partnerships with communities consistently. Again, I'm a former academic. I know that there are countless examples where academics have partnered with businesses or community organizations, but that's not something that they tend to be doing every day. We're going to be waking up every day and thinking about how do we bring these different experts together, the assets that they're bringing to the table, the perspectives that they're bringing to the table, and put that in service to climate solutions that are both local and global. Again, the opportunity to create something, to figure out how to get people out of the boxes that they tend to occupy on a regular basis and transform how they approach these challenges, how they engage with others. That's never going to be a boring day if that's what you get to work on.
Fantastic. Dr. Stephen Hammer, thank you again for being a guest on Shaping Sustainable Places, and enjoy the rest of Climate Week.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. You too.
My name is Daniela Arellano. I'm a communications director at Skanska, and I'm coming to you from New York City.
This is Daniela Arellano, our guest reporter in New York.
It's Climate Week in New York City, and the city feels like the center of the climate universe. There's a buzz in the air as government leaders, businesses, and organizations are here to take action on environmental issues, which really makes Climate Week the place to be for bold ideas that are bound to take off.
She got a few minutes to speak with Lena Herc, Skanska's EVP for Sustainability and Innovation, and a returning guest on the podcast during a busy Climate Week.
What are your main impressions from this year's New York Climate Week?
Something that strikes me, and what I hear over and over again, is that sustainability is all about business from different perspectives. One perspective is, of course, when you are driving a focus on sustainability, it also means that you're driving efficiency and efficient use of resources, foremost materials, water and energy. And of course, if you're able to be much more efficient in your use of those resources, it also is positive on the bottom line because you do save cost in the meanwhile while you are saving carbon. So I think that's the first thing that's obvious to everyone. But the second aspect is also how much sustainability and the green transition are being more an integrated part of business. That's very obvious when it comes to the built environment for several reasons. One, unfortunately, is that we are the first generation that actually has to deal with the effects of a warming climate, meaning more heat waves, heavier storms, as well as rising floods. And for us to make sure that we are safeguarding the cities, the people living within the cities, as well as the infrastructures and the buildings so they can withstand those extreme weather events. That's also something our customers are asking of us. As well, the investors also want to make sure when they insure property or infrastructure, or when they invest in it, or when they are granting a loan. That also means that there has started to evolve a much more systematic way of how to actually foresee and also how to evaluate the sustainability performance, both when it comes to risks as well as opportunities.
Of all the things that you're seeing and hearing about, are there any surprises, anything that's caught you by surprise?
Yes, something that did surprise me was to see that this is actually the largest New York Climate Week ever. It's about 1,000 events, and you can really see how much people want to get together. Another surprise is to see how firmly business and corporations really are stepping in when it comes to the sustainability arena. And if I may say so, the real economy, those that are actually putting the stuff out there, they're really taking this seriously because it is becoming a part of their business case. It's the same with Skanska. If we can actually use tech tools in order for us to design in a slimmer design, using less resources, smarter design, having a logistic chain that we are making faster or having less trucks out on the road because we're having circular solutions close by to our project. That's a win-win situation.
And turning to construction and development, specifically here during New York Climate Week, what have been the biggest trends that you have seen this year?
I would say one of the biggest trends is how much everyone are talking also about enabling innovation and also the use of new technologies. That also ties into, I think, the keen interest from finance when it comes to understanding the green transition and also how to evaluate it. I heard some great facts from the London Stock Exchange Group that has really been doing some great reports. And what they are looking at is a green market, so to speak. Those actions and economic transitions that are taking place in order to actually being part of the green transition. And that can be, for example, energy efficiencies in building, some circular solutions or products adding into the green transition. So when the London Stock Exchange Group has been looking at this, they kind of concluded that if you were to label these activities as one industry, a green industry, it would actually be the fourth biggest in the world. And it would also be the second most profitable looking back the past 10 years. And of course, we're not used to see this as an industry. But if you are looking at just what's happening here, that's, I think, a reason why many are talking about sustainability as a business opportunity. And equally, of course, the importance of being attentive to the risks.
Tell me a little bit more about the discussions that happened this week hosted by Skanska and some of those conversations and questions that came up.
We had a really good session where we invited both customers and partners to hear about some great projects together with EDC and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. What I can conclude, one important aspect here is actually how vital it is that whatever you want to achieve in a project, it has to come up in the very beginning. And when I say the very beginning, I really mean in the procurement phase. It's really important to identify what are the risks they want to mitigate, for example, resiliency, or what are the gains that energy efficiency or nature-based solutions or water efficiencies, to really be able to, in the very beginning, talk about it and make sure you make room for those kinds of innovative solutions to actually reach those targets. That also means to think of sustainability not just on the operational efficiency side, but also how it does make sure it becomes a premium, maybe for tenants willing to pay for a more premium indoor environment when it comes to both lighting, when it comes to air, etc. But there was, of course, how we're developing cities. Having that as a part of the procurement process is actually something Skanska has identified. And we have showcased some best-in-class examples of how this is being done, and doing a shout-out to, for example, the Port Authority here in New York and the JFK Airport, as well as some great examples in UK, Norway, and Sweden. So we see this globally. There are some, both public procurement and also private, that are really thinking ahead and in the very earliest stage start to identify what's the performance they want to achieve, and by that inviting us for coming to the table with innovative and tech solutions that we can actually help them to achieve those goals.
It sounds like one of our biggest strengths is being able to provide solutions to our clients and being able to offer innovative ways to do things. From what you heard, what were some of the biggest challenges that we still have to solve that we may not have solutions to quite yet, or are at least working toward?
I just mentioned how important it is just in the very early stage to set the design of a project in order to achieve great performance. That's also our biggest challenge, because honestly, in our industry, there is far too often that it's the lowest bid that is a winning bid in a procurement situation. That unfortunately also means that there's a tendency not to have new solutions and more modern and actually more efficient solutions being part of those bids. Because if you solely go on the lowest bid, it's also more conservative or traditional methods being used. You don't open up for innovations and new solutions. So I would say our biggest challenge is actually to, in the very beginning, being part of the dialogue with the customers, for them to use our expertise of what can be done, and for us to really understand their needs to also come with those innovative solutions to the table.
We've heard from the New York Climate Exchange. Can you give us your reflections on that project?
I was out visiting the project yesterday, and I was amazed by the level of innovative solutions and aims that they are putting forth. Enormous solar solutions, as well as one of the most ambitious or largest mass timber buildings, and equally also renovation and refurbishment of existing buildings. And the city is really making an effort to clean the area, as well as to thinking forward how to make that a part of the vibrant development of New York. And that's, I think, where Governor Island comes in, because that's also going to be a research center for climate solutions and quite innovative solutions. And part of the collaborations is also with the Billion Oyster Project. And that's fascinating to understand what nature-based solutions can mean. So the Billion Oyster Project started off with thinking of what if you could actually plant a billion oysters outside New York in this area between the Governor Island and Brooklyn Marine Terminal, to make sure that those oysters, they are in the nature of their beings, is actually cleaning the water. And they are natural habitats of the New York ports 100 years ago, but they have grown extinct due to the heavy pollutions. So what the Billion Oyster Project is doing is actually to put those oysters out there and making sure that they are building oyster banks, cleaning the water, and also being an integral part and actually having their organization being at Governor Island.
It sounds like those oysters are going to be put to work and do some very good work at that. Anything else you've seen during this New York Climate Week that has stood out to you?
Yes, something that really stands out to me is that there is less talk and there's more focus on action. I think that's wholesome, because if you turn ambitions into actions and concrete work that you are doing, you can also evaluate it and put a number, a figure on it. That figure being carbon emissions, or the figure being about decrease of risk and or resiliency, or the overall value creation from a financial point of view. What your actions are, how you can measure them, that matters. So let's talk more actions. And to me, action speaks so much louder than words. So I'm really pleased to see what's going on, as well as having those actions being realized and also being heard.
Well, Lena, thank you so much for being with us today. It really has been so inspiring to see so many people come together to hear from leaders and people who are making a difference in the sustainability world. And really grateful to have you and to have other leaders from Skanska at New York Climate Week and here in New York. So thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Stephen Hammer, CEO of the New York Climate Exchange, joined us to discuss the evolution of Climate Week and the urgent need for new financing models to scale climate action. He also spoke about the exchange's vital work in developing urban climate solutions. The exchange brings together academia, business, and communities to foster innovative solutions, exemplified by the new climate campus on Governor's Island. Dr. Hammer also highlighted New York City's unique leadership position and the importance of collaboration across sectors. Leanna Herc, Skanska's EVP for Sustainability and Innovation, provided valuable insights into the construction industry's growing commitment to sustainability. She emphasized that sustainability is now a core business driver, leading to greater efficiency and more innovative solutions. Leanna highlighted the importance of integrating sustainability considerations from the outset of projects, particularly during the procurement process. She addressed the challenge of prioritizing sustainability and not just the lowest bid in procurement processes, and stress the need for collaborative partnerships that drive meaningful change. A key takeaway was the call for action and how key players are joining forces to have a positive impact on communities for generations to come. Thanks for joining us on this special episode of Shaping Sustainable Places. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss out next time. And please reach out if you want to comment on something we discuss. You can mail us at podcast@skanska.com or reach out via our Skanska Group LinkedIn account. Until next time, I'm John Ambrose, and this is Shaping Sustainable Places.